It really was the second storm I can think of that year. I just felt horrible for the families and the people affected, thinking, you know, what do we do? That my wife basically looked at me and she goes, you need to go. You should get the barbecue community together. And instead of going and competing, just cook for the people of the community. You know, we served a few thousand meals the first day we were there. We cooked everything that we could get our hands on. A little old lady pulled in that parking lot and she said, it's not just a pulled pork sandwich. She goes, you're showing love. You're showing us love. You're showing us that we're not forgotten, that there's good in humanity still today.
Stories stir the soul.
Stories reveal.
And stories heal.
In this podcast, we will give you an inside look at someone who's had a life-changing breakthrough.
Real people, real stories with real breakthroughs. As a health and wellness expert and coach, and Todd as a men's mentor,
we've seen firsthand what God can do when it comes to a breakthrough. So lean in, listen well. This could be your biggest breakthrough.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Your Biggest Breakthrough. I'm your host, Wendy Pett.
I'm Todd Isburner, and today our guest, Stan Hayes, is going to share a story with you of something that began as a response to a tragedy that's now grown into this like massive, powerful movement of healing, purpose, hope, and barbecue.
Barbecue. Oh, I love it. I love it. Yes, you will be so inspired hearing how when you follow God's call, even when it means stepping into the unknown, and how that yes that you say can literally bring comfort to millions of people.
So maybe God's going to reveal to you, you know, a breakthrough that might start with a simple act of service. And that's what happened with Stan. You're going to hear more about that. But you might not be like a pit master like Stan is, but you've got something. And it might be your time, your resources, your passion, whatever it is. And if God is saying, okay, I want to use that, then just give him the green light. Just say, God, I'm going to lean into this. Where do you want me to go? What do you want me to do? And I promise you, if you listen closely to Stan's story, he's going to tug at your heart.
For sure. Yeah. Stan Hayes is the CEO and co-founder of Operation Barbecue Relief. He's a seasoned and accomplished competitor on the barbecue circuit. I mean, did you even know there's
a
barbecue circuit?
There's a whole world. It's a whole different culture, barbecue culture.
I love it. So Hayes and fellow co-founder Will Cleaver launched Operation Barbecue Relief when a tornado swept through Joplin, Missouri in 2011.
So Hayes' passion for barbecue and assisting those in distress all culminated in creating Operation Barbecue Relief. You got to check that out on their website. Now, listen to this. They've provided approximately 13 million meals in 42 states plus the Bahamas since this all began.
Crazy good. I love it. Yes. And in 2017, Hayes was actually recognized as a CNN hero for his work with Operation Barbecue Relief.
And he doesn't want any attention.
I mean, he doesn't.
He's like a really humble guy.
Very humble. But he's also, and we didn't get a chance to talk about this in the interview, but I want to make known that he was runner up in 2015 season of the show Chopped, which I've seen that show. It is like so intense. Grill Masters on Food Network. And in 2019, he won Food Network Canada's Fire Masters. Anyway, he's also written books. He's got books, cookbooks. The first one's called Operation Barbecue. And then the second newest book is co-authored with Mike Golick. And guess the name. It's really creative.
Come on, bring it.
Grilling with Golick and Hayes. So, hey, enjoy the show. Well, welcome, Stan Hayes, to Your Biggest Breakthrough. It's awesome to have you on the show today.
Todd and Wendy, thank you so much. This is a great opportunity, and I look forward to sharing with you today.
Well, I was telling Wendy before we started recording, after reading your bio and realizing this is a whole different world, this whole barbecue world. And it's just amazing how what you have done in your life, and I just like to maybe touch on the starting point for you in terms of the ministry that you really developed. And that is back in, was it 2011, when that tornado hit Joplin? What happened to you when you first heard it? And then what did you do in response to it?
Sure. Well, if you think back to May, I think 22nd of 2011, it was a Sunday. So it was a Sunday early evening, and it really was the second storm I can think of that year, about a month and a half, almost 2 months earlier, was Tuscaloosa, Alabama tornado. That tornado, I remember watching Tuscaloosa happening live with a helicopter basically flying behind a tornado, you know, showing the damage as it happens. And I was just in awe at the same time. I had this, you know, sinking heart. Alabama's not close, you know, but I just felt, you know, horrible for the families and the people affected, right? So, you know, not 2 months later when it happens, you know, 2.5 hours from your home, you're glued to the TV. You're watching this. You know people from that community. My corporate job, I spent time down in Joplin before. So I knew the community some. I knew people in the community. I knew people from the barbecue community that were in that, you know, that lived there. So, you know, it was something that was sort of reeling, you know, afterwards of what you do, what can you do? And it wasn't till the next morning, you know, sitting there thinking about what we could do as I was getting ready for work that my wife, you know, basically looked at me and she goes, "You need to go." And being a little bit of a smart aleck, I was like, yeah, I know. I'm a little late for work. Are you normally out of the house by then? And she's like, no. You should get the barbecue community together, the people that you compete with and everybody. And instead of going and competing, go set up in a parking lot, you know, with minimal needs like you would for a competition, but come together and just cook for the people of the community.
Oh, my gosh. Hold, wow, it, hold it. Hold it. What's your wife's
name?
My wife's name's Amy.
Amy, go, thank you for Amy.
So, and I've used that as an excuse for the travel over the years that it was her idea, yeah. But it doesn't work as much anymore as it used to. But, you know, I left the house thinking, you know, what do we do? What do we do? And I kept coming back to what she said. And you know, I had about a 40-minute drive to work, but 5 minutes into that drive, I got on the phone with the guy that got me into competition barbecue, sort of my mentor. And I said, "Hey, Jeff, what do you think?" And before I finished my sentence, he's like, "Man, I was trying to think of something that we could do as well, you know, to bring people together. And I love this idea. Let's go." And I worked for an insurance company at the time. So I said, "Let me work to see if I can set up near them or in the same parking lot. They usually get a large space and let's see if we can find a way. And why don't you put together a Facebook page and let's get this out to the barbecue community. Hey, we're going to go." Right. Mm-hmm. So I made it to work, you know, after about a 15-20 minute phone call, I make it to work. I look at my boss, tell him what I'm, you know, what I'm looking at doing, that I need a few days off. And he just looked at me and says, "Go." Mm-hmm. You know, that was still, you know, I just was transitioning to a different job. And he's like, that was your area. You know the people in that area, you know, with the company, so just go. So I literally was at the office for a couple hours, putting some things, you know, to bed and got in my car, drove back home. And I thought, you know, what do I need to take? And I literally loaded up, you know, two giant coolers in my company car and went to, you know, and thought, okay, the hardest thing to get in the first 48 hours after something like this is ice. And we're going to be cooking and we're going to need ice and stuff. So I loaded, you know, I loaded a Ford Fusion, you know, company vehicle with two huge coolers of ice and said, okay, you know, we at least have some ice to start. Got down there, met up with some friends, you know, found the location, stayed at a friend's house that night. And the next morning we started rolling in. So that would have been Tuesday morning. We started rolling in smokers and people started coming. By Tuesday evening, you know, we have things going on the smoker. And as we're putting things on the smoker, the tornado sirens go off again. At this point, you know, you're like looking at each other going, "Is this real? Is this actually happening?" And with that, the security guard that was there with Farmers Group says, "Hey, you need to, there's a, right across the street, Forest Park Baptist Church has a basement, and that's, they have people that are staying there. You know, they've been evacuation site. Go there. They have a storm, you know." So we're sitting there, finishing putting on pork butts onto the smoker. And ones that we hadn't opened up were like throwing in the back of a refrigeration truck and going, okay, well, we're going to leave the smoker and all our setup here, and we're going to go across the street to the church. And we get there, we get in the church, and it's like the most, you know, surreal thing is to see the look on people's faces after what they just went through 48 hours earlier to have these sirens going off, you know? And I just remember they had this little hallway, like a tunnel, that they were pushing. Hey, let's get back in here. And we're already underground. So they want us to go back in there. And I stepped back in that area, and it had to have been 10 degrees hotter in that tunnel already. And there were a lot of older people and stuff. And I said, you know what? I don't know that I can stay in here. And I've never been one to be claustrophobic or anything else. But it was more about just seeing the horror on their face as this is happening. So I started bringing in chairs, and me and a couple other people started grabbing some folding chairs for the, you know, some of the older people that were there. And all of a sudden my phone starts ringing. I'm like, what the heck's going on? Pick up my phone, and it is, you know, one of my friends. And he's like, where are you guys? And the radio's blaring in the background. And I'm like, where are you? And he's like, I'm at the corner of 7th and Range Line. You said this is where to come. I said, look to your right. Do you see a smoker going? And he's like, yeah, but I don't see anybody. And I said, turn down the radio and roll down your window. He rolls it down, and all of a sudden you hear, are those tornado sirens? And I'm like, yeah. So we're at the church across the street. So why don't you get your butt over here and get out of whatever might be coming? Now, luckily, it was just a supercell that was coming through, and in a community that was already reeling a little bit. So I think they were overly cautious with it. But it certainly set the tone for that week after seeing these people talking to the church on what we were planning on doing. And, you know, that next day we served almost the amount of meals I thought we'd serve the rest of the week.
Wow.
What I thought would be 3 or 4, maybe 5 days and a few thousand meals. You know, we served a few thousand meals the first day we were there. We cooked everything that we could get our hands on.
Wow. That's incredible, and Stan. I just have to interrupt real quick because,
sure.
First of all, I think about how a lot of times people don't take action because they don't have it all planned out and figured out. Well, you didn't either. And I think how that takes courage, it takes faith, and it just takes, it's that faith in action, and God will just bring it all together and make sense of it. And so I just want to say kudos to you, first of all, for just being one to take action and get your buddies lined up and just say, let's go, let's do it and figure it out along the way. But second of all, I just wanted to just say thank you for your willingness to go and meet the need when you didn't necessarily know what was needed or how many meals. You just went and served. And I think that's a big message there. And so as you were serving those meals and you had that feeling of those, you know, the looks in those people's eyes, like what emotions were you feeling as you were serving these precious people?
Yeah. So, you know, as we started serving the people, you know, I've always been a big believer that things happen for a reason, right? And you know, there were times that we were running out of whatever, you know. And literally, I remember one day, you know, like day two after we had put this out, so it had been about 48 hours after we put it out there, and we had teams from, you know, 8 additional states come into Missouri, 9 additional states, something like that.
Wow.
And you know, a FedEx, you know, van shows up in the parking lot and it's like, hey, we're looking for the barbecue guys. We're supposed to deliver this pallet to you. We're like, what are you talking about? We open it up and it's barbecue sauce. One of the things that we're ran out of at this point.
Wow.
It's a pallet of barbecue sauce.
Oh,
like who heard? You know, how did the word get out?
The barbecue community, the word got out in the barbecue community, and a company called Stubbs Barbecue out of Austin, Texas,
And
they just shipped it to us. And literally we said that we're at the corner of 7th and Range Line. We didn't even have an address. So this guy in a FedEx, I don't know if it could happen today without an address, right? But he just shows up at the corner of, you know, 7th and Range Line, sees smokers and go, I'm assuming you guys are the barbecue guys, right? Because that's what it said,
that's
right?
That's good.
We had, you know, the next one that I think of is putting out on, you know, going, guys, we're running out of bread. We can't find bread, you know, and everything. And then all of a sudden, here comes like a Bimbo Bakery bread truck into the parking lot. And the guy's like, hey, all the restaurants I work with are closed because of this and everything. And I was looking and I saw you guys and I'm wondering if you guys could use bread. And I mean, it's just like, oh my God, you're kidding me. You know?
Wow.
So, you know, how things happen, you know, during these times are amazing because it brings people together. And, and we know that food's the greatest unifier in the world.
Yeah.
And when you can use it for good and somebody's worst day of their life, you know, a good hot meal, we know how comforting that can be. But it wasn't until a little old lady pulled in that parking lot. So this is where I'm going to get choked up. I do it every time. I tell this story, you know, I don't know how many times, and it still gets me because it's what I go back to if I ever start losing faith or I ever wonder, are we doing the right thing? And it is, this lady drives in the parking lot and her vehicle's beat. I mean, we're talking like a old Cutlass Sierra, you know, type vehicle, and it's just beat up from tree limbs, from hail, from all the debris. And you can barely see her in the car because it's piled up with stuff. And, you know, my thought is, that's everything that she probably owns that she could find right now. Cause this is 3 days in or so. Mm-hmm. And, from the storm. And I'm just thinking that's all she's got probably left. You know, she's combed through the yard, combed through whatever. So she gets out and she's sort of standing off to the edge of the area and our food service line's going and everything. And I walked over and I was like, can I help you? And she's like, I was told I could come here and get a meal. I was like, absolutely. So I walk her over to the line, talking with her a little bit. And I said, please, you know, if you need more than one meal, let us know what you need. If you need some for family, you need some, whatever. She's like, no, it's just for me. So she gets in line. I walk off, do something. And I turn around probably, you know, 10 minutes later and she's standing at the same spot again. But this time she's crying with a to-go container. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what's wrong? You know? So I go over there and I was like, what's wrong? Can I help you? And she's like, no, I just need to know who to thank.
Oh.
And I said, excuse me? I'm like, who to thank? I said, we're here to give you guys a good comforting meal. It's just a pulled pork sandwich. And she looked at me and she said, it's not just a pulled pork sandwich. She goes, you're showing love. You're showing us love. You're showing us that we're not forgotten, that there's good in humanity still today. And that's when it hit me. I was like, this has nothing to do with food. This has to do with treating people the way, you know, if you were in your worst day, it's giving that, you know, something that you would want, right? A good comforting meal, something that reminds you of good times, right? Barbecue reminds you of bringing together, right? There is no food that I can think of that celebrates life the way barbecue does. You see it at you know, from the announcement of, you know, having a baby to having the baby to weddings to funerals. The circle,
I mean, definitely
of life
in the South. That's where I grew up. I don't know about Todd in the Midwest, but yeah.
I think it's lutefisk up here, but I don't think they grill that.
Well, you know, if you get into lutefisk and everything, because I grew up in a very Swedish town in central Kansas, so I'm very familiar with lutefisk. I'll go for some pickled herring. I cannot do, you know, I'll go for all kinds of Swedish, you know, stuff, but
I'm hearing
that
you.
Is not
well, listen, I one of the things that inspires me about those moments that you were experiencing in that first barbecue relief project is that, again, like Wendy said, you really didn't have a roadmap to follow on this thing. Like, it's just, okay, we're barbecue guys. We know there's a great community. Let's just help people.
Let's just go.
And I think what really speaks to me is that you don't always have to have all the answers. God's going to provide, just like he did for you.
Oh, yeah.
He provided the bread and the sauce and the affirmation. I think this is most important, that God gave you the affirmation of what you were doing was pleasing
lady,
in his sight. Mm. And he expressed that through that wonderful little old lady. So there you were in that moment. Now you've finished things up. I'm guessing at some point you're headed back home. What are you thinking at that point? Are you thinking, well, here's the beginning of a brand new ministry? Or are you just thinking, like, where did it go from there?
So about day three of cooking and everything, we're all sitting around in the evening, and it had become a thing at this point where we started putting out, you know, that so many first responders were in the community, trying to help, trying to, and they were put up at in college dorms. And we found out they were going back after a 16-hour day and eating MREs and what they were carrying and stuff. And so we put the word out to some of the officers and stuff that were in the barbecue community that we knew were working there that came by because they heard where we were at. And I said, put this out. So they literally went on the radio and said, hey, guys, this location will feed you. It doesn't matter basically the time or day, you know. And what we found is about 10, 11 o'clock at night was when these guys were getting done, coming in from, you know, search and rescue, coming in. And so, you know, we would put food on early, you know, 7 o'clock, you know, on the smokers. And we had people that would take naps just to get up to serve these first responders at 11 o'clock at night.
Wow.
You know, just to sit there and break bread with them and let them talk if they wanted to talk, because they were going through extremely, you know, difficult times.
Yeah.
And we had U.S. Marshals, we had National Guardsmen, we had, you know, police officers from communities all around, you know, the state that were sent down there to help. And, you know, that's when we really saw, you know, hey, it's just not the people affected. It's the people that come to, you know, it's the helpers that come to the community that are also affected because the restaurants aren't open. There isn't a place to go for them. So we need to make sure that they're fed just as well to make sure that they can help the community, you know, continue. And so that's, we're all sitting there talking about it. And there was a group that was with us. It was a poultry company out of Fort Smith, Arkansas, that showed up in the parking lot with a refrigerated semi truck of chicken and said, hey, how can we help? We would like to join you. We heard you could use some help. They set up their smoker as well with their product and helped cook, you know, for those days. But sitting there with one of the guys, as he was talking about Katrina and how hard it was and how, you know, that everywhere they turned, it was like a roadblock. And what we were creating, he'd never seen anything like. I mean, you know, we were told not to come. We were told by all the big nonprofits, you know, that you know the names of, that we weren't needed. Everything was taken care of. But by day three, those nonprofits were picking up hot meals from us because there was nowhere else to get them. You know,
Stan, I feel like that can preach in such a mighty way, because I think about how, you know, where does relief find relief, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's where you guys have stepped in, even for those that were relieving those that were in this disaster. You were helping them and to fortify them and to fuel them up and to gird them so that they could continue to press on and persevere. And man, I just have a whole new kind of just awareness of what you guys were up against and what you were willing to do in this ministry. And I think about how this started just a few thousand meals, and now you have served over 13 million over the years of your ministry. And so I don't know how quickly we want to jump to that, but you know, I just know that, you know, you helping to relieve the relief force is powerful.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, as we jump forward, because it's, you know, it is a big jump, but I would tell you the biggest thing that we saw when all of this was done was there was a gap, a major gap when it came to food that was not being filled. And we thought, man, we're uniquely qualified. We can go set up in a parking lot with minimal needs and smokers and do this. Now, today, that footprint's a lot different. Right. But we have so many basics that came from that parking lot in Joplin. I mean, things like, you know, when you start getting questions like, are you serving that chicken again today? Or, you know, means people aren't as hungry as they once were. Right. When they start becoming selective on what the food choices are. Which, you know, when you start seeing the local restaurants and civic groups coming together to start making a difference in their community, because communities don't heal when organizations like ours come in. They heal when the churches and the civic groups in that community come together and say, it's our turn now to take care of our people.
Mm-hmm.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. And so
go ahead.
I was going to say, once we see that, that's when we know it's time for us to build that exit strategy out of the community to let them take over.
I'm picturing you guys, again, back in the parking lot of Joplin, and just the experiences that you are having, really for the first time, in serving these people who are so broken and I'm sure feeling just at a loss when their lives are completely devastated. You're a man of faith, and so I'm just wondering, was it in that parking lot, was sort of a turning point where God really started to get your attention for what he knew was going to be coming next? You didn't necessarily know it was all going to lead to, but talk a little bit about how your faith has played a major role in where you were at that point and where you are today.
Yeah. Again, I mentioned I grew up in a small little Swedish town in central Kansas, and that, you know, that little Swedish town truly framed, you know, me, you know, through faith in church, through faith in the community, you know, things that I never saw in myself. We saw, I never saw myself. I didn't see this servant leader that some of my friends saw in youth and in college. I went from this and I decided that, you know, when I started thinking about what was important in life, and at that time I thought the corporate ladder and becoming an executive and doing all these things that I had trained to do and everything over the years was what was important. And what I found was, you know, that corporate ladder wasn't quite as important as what I saw happen in that parking lot. The humbling feeling of handing somebody something as simple as a pulled pork sandwich. And, you know, myself and the other co-founders looked at each other and I'm like, man, as we're developing what this organization is going to be, because we'd already decided it was going to become a nonprofit by day like three, to do something. We had no idea it would ever get to the size it is. We have no idea all of these things, but what we did have was the faith that what we would do would make a difference in people's lives. Yeah. And for us, we didn't realize what a difference it was making in ours, because, you know, what I realized after a while, and it took a little while, and it took even longer to tell my wife that, you know, what I thought was important in that corporate ladder and everything really wasn't important. You know, I had my priorities were mixed up, you know, that helping people in their worst time of need, you know, was where I really should be. And, you know, and it took years even after that. You know, it took to 2018 before I left the corporate world to do this full time. Now, it wasn't that I wasn't spending plenty of vacation and plenty of other time doing this, but I wasn't able to give it 100% at the time.
And so what size is the organization now, like from 2011 to now?
So we just hired our 30th full-time employee yesterday. Wow. And we have, I think, 5 part-time employees. We're all virtual. So the team works from home in, I believe, 9 additional states to Missouri. We have, you know, you mentioned Texas. We have several employees down in Texas, including the newest person we just hired. We've got a location in Florida. We have a warehouse down in Pinellas Park, a suburb of Tampa. We have our warehouse here outside of Kansas City, and we have another warehouse in East Tennessee. I can get a lot more space and a lot more for the dollar in East Tennessee than I can in Kansas City or in Tampa or Texas. So that is, you know, also given us, a fairly good roadmap of where we put equipment, because we're not big enough yet to have equipment everywhere, you know. Mm-hmm. And what we do, we're best at, you know, setting up together. But, you know, it's one of those things, as growth comes, you know, change and everything also gets hard.
Yeah, I love the name of the organization, and it's important to emphasize that last word. It's Operation Barbecue Relief. And I'm picturing you guys when you're on the scenes of these catastrophes, these disasters. And again, you're looking into the eyes of people who feel so hurt, so confused, so afraid, so lost, so helpless. Mm-hmm. And I'm certain there must be times where you're hearing them ask the question, why God, why did you let this happen to me? Oh, and where are you now? And it struck me, you guys don't necessarily have to give the answers in words. Like, well, here's the theological explanation as why.
Yeah.
What you do is you serve people,
love
people, you bring food into it, which is of great comfort, especially when it's barbecued the way you guys do it. And it hit me how simple that can be. So Stan, let me ask you, why do so many of us just sort of overlook those simplicities when we try to respond to somebody in need? Why do we overlook the simple things that you guys are so good at?
And then therefore end up not serving and helping.
Yeah, there's two things I think of. One is, you know, sometimes we tend to speak more instead of listen. And sometimes by listening, you know, a bigger answer is not answering. You know, I mean, when you bring people together that are going through so much and you give them a place to come together and everything, sometimes it's letting them talk to each other to help guide them. And by, you know, when you can put people together that are going through similar things and you use food as the catalyst, right, to bring them together, you know, when people start talking about, hey, you remember the barbecue that you know we had for the subdivision a couple years ago? You know, I can't wait till we rebuild and we can do that again. You know, because it's that barbecue, it's the smells, it's the it's everything that goes with it. And what it does is it's giving them hope, even if it's for a few minutes, while they're going to rebuild, that it's going to be okay. That, you know, when they're talking to that neighbor, when they're talking to that, you know, that colleague in the community, and they're saying that, you know, I will tell you, I've never seen the resilience the way I do when I go into these communities. You often think about that, and you hear more positive than you hear negative from them. And that resiliency of coming together and saying, you know, hey, we're going to rebuild or we're going to be okay is really, you know, one of the things that we talk about. When we talk with our volunteers and start getting them ready, you know, I talk about, you're going to find your why. Mm. It may not be this disaster. It might be your next disaster, but you're going to find that little old lady that changes what you think, you know, and why you're doing what you're doing. Mm. And when they find their why, it is amazing. I mean, I've seen it when it's happened. I've had them come up to me afterwards and said, man, you know, I was wondering if I was ever going to do this, or maybe I was just one of those people that was never going to find it. But, you know, I had a guy who'd been with us for years and really not found it. And then I was there the day he did.
Mm. Mm. That's so cool.
And to watch that emotion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a powerful thing. You know, finding your why is amazing to see. And it's amazing to hear. I've had the opportunity with volunteers to sit around and ask them, you know, well, you know, what's your why? You know, what did you find, you know, and doing this, you know, because I think the third part of this is that we give volunteers the opportunity to serve, to be a servant leader, to come in and do something that's much bigger for them than them, for them. And one of the things is, and I talk about this and some people look at me strange, but, you know, volunteering is truly a selfish act. It's not a selfless act. It's a selfish act. And that's because of what you get out of it. Hmm. You know, when you think about it, the way your heart is full after something sometimes so bad, it is in many ways a selfish act, because you feel rejuvenated. You feel good because you're doing something good. Hmm. But something bad had to happen.
Yeah. It's good perspective.
And so people look at me really weird. They're like, no, it's a selfless act. And I'm like, I don't really think it is. I think it's a selfish act. And
I've never
because
heard
how much
of it
drives
that.
People. Seriously, I'm thinking, how many people go to bed after serving somebody else in a wonderful way and think to themselves, oh man, I feel miserable. Why did I ever do that?
Yeah, they go to bed feeling great.
You do. You feel great when you do it. So that's a great perspective.
And so I talk about, it's okay to feel a little selfish at this time, because the good that you're doing, you know, for people and for your soul is part of it. So for me, that's one of those things that I talk about. And you know, with our growth, you know, grows into our other programs. You know, last year we did more non-disaster programming than we did disaster programming. We had 24 different disasters, and we served about, you know, just shy of 1.6 million meals last year. One time having four different locations going for because of Helene and Milton hurricanes across multiple states. But when you can go and use food as that unifier and use culinary therapy with our heroes that are out there that are going through so much, when you bring, you know, first responders or veterans or active military or even families of the fallen together to help them get over, or and get over is not even the right word, help them
get through yeah
what they're going through.
You know, real quick, Stan, from a physiological kind of talk, I think about how just from a neurotransmitter, neurochemical reaction that the smells of certain foods have, and the taste, and it's that feeling of home, and that feeling of happiness and joy, and so all of that is scientifically proven, and I think that that's something else that you're offering, is that you're giving them a little taste and a little sense of home, and it feels good for them. But I was thinking, you mentioned about, you know, serving heroes and this kind of thing. Well, you were actually, you've been called a hero yourself. Actually, CNN had you on, and they called you a hero, and you've authored cookbooks and all kinds of things around the master of grilling and barbecuing. And I mean, I've never met a master barbecuer or griller, so I just feel honored. But what was that like to be called a hero in this time when you feel like...
And how do you keep grounded in the midst of all that?
You know, first of all, I get, you know, they had to pick one person from the organization, and they picked me. because of the story, because of you know, everything that we had done, but it really goes to our volunteers and our team. You know, I don't do anything out there. I can't make anything happen without people behind me, without people that are willing to, you know, and I tell everybody, look, you know, we have a great, you know, team. Our employees are amazing, and they make so much happen. But without our volunteers, we don't do anything. Without the people that are willing to take time away from their friends, their family, their jobs, to leave, to come to usually a hot place that's humid, you know, and everything else, to work 12 to 14 hour days, to then turn around and tell people what a difference it's made in their life. I mean, you know, it's, you don't find that. And so, you know, I carry that as, you know, that term as a hero, as a CNN hero, as really carrying the torch for everybody that comes out there, the you know, the 20,000 volunteers that we have nationwide that
wow,
you know, say, hey, I want to give, I want to help, to the companies that have thought enough of what we do to sponsor us to help. That's where I see it as, you know, I'll use the platform, however possible, to continue the growth of the organization, to give the kudos where kudos really are, because, you know, as I said in my, you know, in the speech on CNN Heroes, you know, what I thought was, you know, a pulled pork sandwich was not really what was important, right?
Yeah,
it was what we were showing the community in our actions and being there. You know, the sustenance behind it, you know, it was very much needed, but it was more the act.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So good.
Stan, as we kind of wrap things up here, I know there are people who are listening and they're thinking, man, this sounds really, really good. It's not my thing. I'm glad it's Stan's thing. But you mentioned,
how do you know it might be their thing?
It might be their thing.
Why
are
you telling
them? Well, you don't have to live in the South for it to be your thing either. Barbecue's everywhere. But I'm just thinking, I'm sure there are some who are listening who are thinking, I want to be used of God more than I want some purpose in my serving. I just don't know how to get started. It seems like God put it all together for Stan. Where do I start? Can you give them some encouragement as far as how do you begin in the whole process of serving others?
Yeah, it's funny because I talk to high school kids and junior high and even grade school kids every once in a while about finding their passion. Mm. You got to find your passion. And, you know, I had no idea that what I enjoyed doing and barbecuing and grilling as sort of a passion could become part of what is my life today. But I think that by finding your passion, if it's animals, go find a way to help. You know, there are plenty of rescues out there. There's plenty of groups that you can go, you know, it's taking that first step of finding them. But it is looking in your heart and saying, hey, how can I help? You know, what do I like to do? You know, and if it's, hey, going and reading to seniors at a home where, you know, some of them have been forgotten, some of them don't have family, you know, they don't get visitors. They're always looking for opportunities. Yeah. And then there's that opportunity, you know, through the church and how they can, you know, whether they decide to go abroad and, you know, do some mission work or how they want to do it. But there's so many ways. I mean, I tell people, you know, look, I hope you come and volunteer with us. But when we do our barbecue academies or we do our camps with these heroes and we talk about, you know, what we do, we talk about volunteering. We talk about using their new, you know, grilling skills or whatever, whether it's to help their church or their kids, you know, soccer team in a fundraiser. Use it for good. Use what you're learning. And to me, that is, you know, it starts with finding your passion and you know, figuring out from there.
I love it. I love it. That is so great, Stan. You are just a delight. And we do hope that people will go to it's obr.org. Is that correct?
That's correct.
To learn about Operation Barbecue Relief and how they can volunteer. And I think that they will, you know, sometimes people don't even know where to volunteer or why or how, but just get started and go somewhere and you may find, like your other volunteers, their why. And then they want to continue to volunteer, and it's a feel good, and they can be selfish about it.
Well, and I think one of the bennies
selfish
is
and feeling
one
good.
Of the bennies, it's all the barbecue you can eat.
Oh, okay. Is that it? Oh, Stan.
I'll tell you, you will get tired of barbecue after a while.
Yeah, bring out the lutefisk.
Yeah, right. That's so funny. Well, oh, God bless you, that. Stan.
No, good.
Yeah, right.
Don't.
God bless you and
Thank you
Operation
so much.
Barbecue Relief. And is there one final thing you'd like to share with our audience before we wrap up?
Yeah. Yeah, I tell everybody there's three ways everybody can help. You know, one of these three things everyone can do. One is go to the website, check it out. If you have the availability and everything, register as a volunteer today. You know, we may not have something in your community today, but we may, you know, next month, next week, you know, we don't know the storms are going to happen or if we're going to have one of these events to celebrate our heroes in a community near you. So that's one way. The second way is, you know, obviously you can donate. There's a donate button right there on the website. And if you have the means and everything to do so, please do. But if you can't do the, you know, either of those things, share this podcast, share the messaging with all of your friends about what we're talking about, you know, because I believe when everybody does this, it expands the network. It expands the good that we're doing out there. But it also shows people, you know, sometimes, hey, I can find what I'm passionate about. I can find that, you know, what I want to do. Look at what he did. And I may take this passion over here and turn it into something else. And, you know, so those three things are very simple. It's not extremely tough to do, but if you do those three things, you know, one of those three things, it's going to help the organization.
Yeah. Well, wonderful. Well, thank you, Stan.
Good.
And again, those of you listening, go to obr.org and we will put that in the show notes as well. But God bless you. And thanks so much for the interview, Stan.
Thank you.
Well, that's a wrap for today's show. We hope you enjoyed it. As always, we love spending time with you right here on Your Biggest Breakthrough podcast. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode. But until then, just head on over to yourbiggestbreakthrough.com, where you'll find some free resources and information and a place where you can comment, and we would love to dialogue with you there. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.